Okay, welcome everyone. I'm Professor Nayere Tohidi, and I have been coordinating bilingual lecture series since 2003. I hope I can still do this for another few years. Before I introduce our distinguished speaker today, I wanted to let you know that our next speaker will be Professor Abbas Amanat, and he will be giving two talks, one in Persian, Farsi, on Sunday, February 4th, from 4 o'clock till 6 in Persian, and one in January, on January 31st, on Wednesday, in English, 4 to 6 again, and it's going to be in Royce Hall, third floor, you know, the usual room we use for our Persian talks. So,
On what subject?
Oh, the subject is on his new book, which is the A History of Modern Iran. So it's a book talk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's a very well-known professor of history of Iran. Okay, today's talk, which we had the pleasure of listening to in Farsi, in Persian, yesterday, by Professor Behrouz Parhami, who is professor of electrical and computer engineering at UC Santa Barbara, where he teaches and does research in computer hardware architecture. He's a life fellow of IEEE, I guess International Engineering and
Electrical and Electronics Engineers.
Okay. And a fellow of IET, Institute of Electrical Technology?
Engineering and Technology.
And British Computer Society. And he's recipient of several awards. He has written 6 textbooks and more than 300 peer-reviewed technical papers. One of his papers we were just talking about won the prize of most frequently cited paper. Most relevant to this talk today is his 12 years of experience in Iran, spanning 1974 to 1986, both pre- and post-revolution Iran, where he studied the Persian language in connection with computers and their applications. He participated in technology transfer and standardization projects. He helped establish the Informatics Society of Iran and its technical journal called Gozareshe Computer, Computer Report, and was a leader in developing computer engineering educational programs and associated curricula. I wanted also to acknowledge our sponsors of this program, which is actually the Bilingual Lecture Series is a program of Iranian studies being sponsored and supported by the Eleanor and Jahangir Amuzgar Chair in Iranian Studies and the Musa Sabi Term Chair of Iranian Studies and the generous support of the Farhang Foundation. And this is also done in collaboration with Center for Near Eastern Studies. So, with no further ado, Professor.
Thank you very much for the introduction. Does everybody hear me okay? Okay. Before I start, just out of curiosity, how many people here, just raise your hand, are familiar with the Persian language or script? Okay. Most. I was afraid that, you know, what I say does not make a lot of sense if you don't know at least something about the Persian language. Although there are some similarities between the Persian script and calligraphic handwriting in English, primarily the similarity is that letters are connected to each other, whereas in English print script, letters are disconnected, they're individual letters. in handwriting, they're connected. That creates one of the problems that I will talk about. Also, the large variations in size, similar between the Persian script and calligraphy, where letters can be very large for aesthetic reasons. You know, the initial Q, for example, if you draw it very large. So that makes creates some challenges in developing print and display mechanisms for the language. Okay, my talk is titled Computers and Challenges of Writing in Persian. And the original title that I had thought of for this talk is 50 Years of Poor Penmanship, How Computers Struggled to Learn the Persian Script. So that original title suggests, you know, the hard work that we put in. When I speak of we in this talk, throughout this talk, I'm talking about me, my colleagues in Iran who worked on this, and people in many computer companies. IBM in those days was a leader. NCR, the initial struggles were shared by those companies as well as specialists and experts in universities and other research centers in Iran. Okay, and the 50 years in my original title or subtitle now spans the years 1967 to 2017. That's the 50 years I'm talking about. Why 1967? That's when I started my fourth year at the Engineering College, University of Tehran. I was studying electrical engineering. In the fourth year, for the first time, I was exposed to computers because a new professor came and he had studied in the U.S., got his PhD in the U.S. and decided that he wanted to teach us about computers. We knew nothing about computers before that. We didn't have any courses. So I took a course in that year on Fortran programming, sort of ancient topic in computer science and engineering, and became familiar with computers. And about the same time, major government organizations and large banks, again, most of them were government banks, started importing computer technology to do their account keeping, customer database, and in the case of government organizations, they wanted to automate their payroll system and personnel information system. So they needed for this to be able to enter names, addresses, and other specifics about these customers into the computer in Persian language. So that's when everybody started thinking about how to adapt this wonderful new technology to the specific features of the Persian language. And as you will see throughout the talk, there were many problems that were eventually overcome in part by hard work, in part by advances in technology that made the problem a little bit easier as the years went by. Okay, so this slideshow I will put online and I will advertise the address of it on my Facebook page, on my blog page, and also through the Iranian Studies page in case anybody is interested to look at these slides in more detail than I can cover in this talk. So each slideshow that I put online usually has a creation date. So this is the first time I'm giving this talk. And if it's updated in future, you will see the corresponding dates there. And there's the English abstract, the Persian abstract for completeness there. Eventually, I hope to write this down either as an extended article or if I find, you know, enough energy and material, a book perhaps, but that's up in the air at this time. Okay, so this is the, when computer came, any technology comes into a new society, we have to adapt it to the local culture, traditions, and language in many cases. A lot of other countries went through this. China, for example, has its own challenges in trying to make computers write in Chinese. And their challenges were, in fact, larger than ours because of their language, the way the alphabet, you know, is so extensive. So, Arabic countries face the same thing. And in fact, the Arabic problems are very similar to Persian because the script is more or less the same, and so on. So, let me see. Do we have a... let me see if I can point to this. Oops, sorry. And see if it works. You have to be able to point. No, it's okay. I'll just give the address of whatever I'm trying to emphasize. So this is sort of a picture of all the articles I've written, mostly a long time ago, 35 years ago, when I was in Iran. And this is a listing of all the articles with details of the title, where they were published, and so on. And in particular, at the top of this page, near the top of this page, you see the link to my publications page, where you can find a PDF of all of these articles. Okay, I sort of traced some of these down. They were old. And recently was able to complete. All of them are now in PDF form on my website. This is a slide I show whenever I talk to people who don't know me in a new place about my background and how I ended up where I am now in UC Santa Barbara. I've been there. This is the 30th year. So I started in... Iran. I was born in Tehran. I graduated from the Engineering College, University of Tehran, in 1968. The next year will be the 50th anniversary of my graduation, and we plan with my former classmates to make a big deal out of it and get together and celebrate. Then in 1969, I went to the U.S. I came to the U.S. and did my graduate work at Oregon State University for master's. And UCLA, right here, for my PhD. I worked at UCLA for a year and a half, the practical training that, you know, immigration allowed me. And then I went back to Iran in 1974 and worked at what in those days was called Arya Mehr University of Technology. Now it's Sharif University of Technology. Let's change its name. For 12 years, 5 years before the revolution and 7 years after. Then after 7 years, you know, things got pretty nasty for a researcher like me who needed access to international conferences, reference sources. It became extremely difficult to get these, get information, collaborate with, international colleagues. So I went to Canada for a sabbatical leave in 1986. And then I looked for a job and ended up at UC Santa Barbara in 1988. So next year, along with the 50th anniversary of my graduation from college, it's the 30th anniversary of my stay in Santa Barbara and work at UC Santa Barbara. So it's going to be a big year. Now, the Persian language in its current form, the way we know it today, is 1,200 years old. Okay, Persian script, the way we write Persian. Persian language is much older than that, and it had older forms, the Old Persian and the Middle Persian, before the modern Persian that we speak and write today. So for much of this time, 1,200 years, the print technology in Iran is about 400 years old. 400 years ago, the first printing machine was brought. In those days, everything was done by the king, so the king probably saw a printing machine on a European trip and decided that we need to have one of those. So it was brought, but it wasn't used extensively for quite some time. So print technology maybe is about 300 years old in widespread use form. So for much of these 1,200 years, people wrote down, hand-wrote Persian. So if a poet wrote a poem, they usually recruited somebody with very good handwriting, if the poet happened to have a good handwriting, maybe he wrote it himself, or in a very few cases herself. There aren't very many female poets from ancient Iran. Today we have many more. So they wrote it, and this became either a single copy book, so they had to write multiple copies, or they had some primitive printing-like techniques to make multiple copies of what the person wrote. Maybe they etched it on a stone or on a piece of wood, and then they put ink on it and pressed paper or parchment or whatever they used in those days to make copies of that. So the Persian language, give you a preview, the Persian writing script went through three significant changes over the years. The first one was 400 years ago, where we decided that we wanted to print this language. And to adapt the script to printing took some specific things that I'll show you and give you examples of. The second change was when typewriters began to appear, and people started to adapt typewriters to the Persian language. That's probably around 110 years ago when typewriters came to Iran. A second set of changes were necessitated because of the limitations of typewriters, and I'll talk about those. And the third set of changes was when computers came and we had to print and display the Persian script with these computers. So we had to modify some things in order, and the modification was both ways, modify the script a little bit and modify the computer technology to be able to print the language. So these are the three things I'll talk about: printing, typewriters, and computers. And these are related because the changes that were made for printing persisted through typewriters. Some additional changes were added to it. And then the typewriter font and script also became the computer script, again with some changes and adaptations. So these are basically examples. You see of, on the left, you see a poem by the great poet Saadi, written in handwriting. And also, because handwriting was so important in the Persian culture, artists started using it as an art form. So they wrote text in a way that was aesthetically nice. Sometimes they used color, sometimes it was just black and white. The distinction between these two is that in the writing on the left, of course, beauty is important, but legibility is also important. People should be able to read these poems or whatever else was being written. Whereas in the one on the right, the main idea is not for it to be legible. You know, people probably won't try to read that, but it's just to look at it as a work of art and enjoy it. Sometimes they're very difficult to read because the letters get mixed and they appear out of order and so on. Okay, there are two major scripts. There are many, many more, called Nastaliq on the left and Nas on the right, that were common before the appearance of print technology and computers, typewriters and computers. Nastaliq on the left is much more artistic or beautiful, but it's much harder to write, and Nasr is easier. The rules are easier. And these types of writing were transferred from the master to students orally, like everything else in those days. So the master, who was known for his handwriting, again, I usually try to use neutral pronouns, but in those days, handwriting masters were all men, like every other walk of life. So here you see that, you know, the shapes of letters, and sometimes there are alternative forms. For example, can you still hear me if I move here? Let's say the letter kaf can be this long form or the shorter form. This is gaf, of course, but it looks the same. And there are different forms of he, for example, like this, and this is a solo, and so on. So they had to learn all of these.
If you stay close to the mic.
Oh, this is the mic. Okay, so that's good. This way I can point to things that are needed to be pointed out. And then there were letters, and there were combinations of letters. The most noteworthy of that in Persian is the Lam Aleph, La, which is written differently from a connection of Lam and Aleph to each other. In English, we have the same thing in print. For example, Fi has a special symbol in print, because if you put an F next to an I, for some reason they think it's not as pretty. Or two Fs and an I. So that aspect is very similar. When the print technology came to Iran, print technology, most people don't know these days about, you know, how early printing went, because we are used to typing text on the computer, then using a laser printer to print it out and send it to the print shop to make into many copies. So early printing used what we call movable font. These are basically small blocks of metal. In those days, they used lead, which is now, of course, is not a good thing to do, because lead is dangerous and people can get sick working with it. But early printing used lead fonts. And each letter is basically a small block of lead on which the shape of the letter in raised form appears. And then the typesetter basically stood in front of this huge tray that had compartments for different letters, and would sort of look at the text. The author gave that person, you know, a text to typeset a page of book. And then they took these letters one by one, set them next to each other on this guide. And this guide was big enough to hold maybe 3-4 lines, because if they made it bigger, it was hard to handle. And then once the 3 or 4 lines are set, they transferred it to a bigger frame and set the next few lines. And until a significant chunk of text had been typeset, and then that typeset thing is printed using a machine like this, where paper goes through, flies through actually, it's very fast. And then the paper comes in contact with these raised letters that are inked, and then the shape of those letters appears on paper. So the way this was done was we printed 16 pages at once on a large sheet of paper. So the typesetter would typeset these 16 pages, 8 pages on one side of the paper, 8 pages on the other. And the order had to be like this, so that when you folded the paper, and then you early ways the books were made, you actually sewed the spine, and then after you sewed it, you would cut these edges so that these pages become separated. If you have seen some old books, sometimes this separation is not perfect. They didn't cut it right, so you have to actually manually cut the edges of the pages to separate them from each other. So it was, you know, it's no longer an applicable technology, but it's good to know, you know,
what came before, today's convenience of printing the way we do. And then this became, nowadays we do use various kinds of glue instead of sewing the spines. And then this became a book. So when we wanted to do this for Persian, this part of the process was the same, of course, you know, paper and sewing and putting the cover on. But the previous part, which is the letters, Persian has 32 letters in its alphabet, okay? English has 26, and then we need all the special symbols, just like we do here, parentheses, period, question mark, and so on. But each Persian letter, in English letter, each letter has two forms, lowercase and uppercase. Each Persian letter had four forms. The beginning form, the middle form, the end form, and the solo form. So this increased the size of this tray. So Persian typesetters had a more difficult time because they had to work with this larger tray. So that was one of the early challenges. This document, I won't talk much about it, is interesting for those who want to trace the history of Persian printing in various countries, not just Iran, in neighboring countries where Persian is spoken by a significant fraction of the population. Unfortunately, it doesn't have any diagrams to show us how they actually did things, what the fonts look like, what the printing presses look like, and so on. But it is basically a textual history of what people did, and you know, if somebody had a book to publish, how they found the right publisher in their area. And so these are examples of early Persian fonts. So it's the same concept, you know, you have blocks made of lead, and on which somebody who has a good handwriting basically designs the fonts, and then either manually they carve it or use a chemical process to etch, you know, around the letter, and the letters sticks out. And this will go into the tray of the typesetter, and the typesetter uses them. Now, this is the first major adaptation of the script when we had to go from handwriting. So this is an example word. There are many other words that I can use as an example. It's the word mujtama' in Persian. And this is a typical way of writing it before printing press came around. And letters tended to be stacked. So here you see the letter mim, M in Persian, and letter J, jim or J, the equivalent of J, are stacked on top of one another. In printing press, this won't work because we want to have what we call movable fonts. We want to have a font, a symbol for mim, that works no matter where it is in the sentence or in the word. And this doesn't let me do that because this mim looks different if it's used in the word mujtame' versus the word madar, mother in Persian. Okay, that doesn't work. Then you have to have multiple. Not only there are four shapes of each letter, beginning, middle, end, and solo, there will be multiple shapes depending on what the next letter is, and sometimes depending on what the previous letter is. This doesn't work. So this word became this one, which is basically expanded and straightened so that there are clear boundaries between letters. So there's the letter mim, the letter jim, the letter te, and therefore the typesetter could take the corresponding blocks and just set them next to each other to make that word. Then in handwriting, we had situations like this, where this letter ge, which is between here, the G basically, extends over the previous letter. This is also a no-no because these blocks had to sit next to each other and you could not have one letter go and cover another one. So we had to change these. The person who wrote could choose to write B like this or the normal form, which is like this. There were very many variations that they used, presumably to make the writing more beautiful. This was also a no-no. We wanted to have just one vowel. Here you see again the stacking of letters, lam, he. In fact, lam appears later in the sequence going from right to left than he, which is the second letter. So these are things that we had to deal with, and therefore we want to. So this is an example of Persian print scripts. The top text is about Takht-e Jamshid, the Persepolis, history of Persepolis. And this is a poem written with letters that have constant widths. The letters with constant widths are important later, especially when typewriters came. Okay, now that I gave you all the disadvantages of the Persian script that made us, you know, change things, there is one advantage that the Latin script, English script doesn't have, and that is the ability to extend letters. So when you set poetry in Persian, it's traditionally the case that you want to have adjusted margins. So in each verse, the beginning of all the verses are aligned, that's the end, and also in the middle, the two halves, you have alignment, and therefore you want to make each of these columns of the same width. If you just put the letters, each of them will have a different width depending on what letters appear in it, but we have the ability of extend. The typesetter had these extenders of various lengths. This is sort of like N dash and M dash in English, different length dashes that you could put. And because the connection line of the letters was standardized, all the connections occurred on this one line, as opposed to here, meme is connected to jim here, jim is connected to the next meme here, and so on. This was standardized so that all the connections were horizontally aligned. And therefore, if you wanted to extend this much time and make it into a longer word in order to fill the space that you have, you could put extenders wherever you wanted. And this made the job of the typesetter easier. In English, in early word processors, we did the same thing by adjusting the spaces. So if you wanted to extend the line to fill, you know, up to the margin, you put more space here. If you know, the text here was naturally shorter, you put more space. And this looked very ugly. I don't know if you have seen, you know, any text from early word processors. This variable spacing made things very ugly. So in Persian, we don't have to do that because we have these extenders. Okay. Arabic and Persian have pretty much the same set of problems, and therefore scientists and engineers in Arab countries have been working in parallel with us on solving these problems. There are some differences in the script, but they are not, you know, large enough, the differences, to make the fundamental problems any different. So here you see some examples of Arabic script. These are modern Arabic scripts. And each of them has a name, Arial, Times New Roman, Arabic, Transparent, Bold. These are names given by computer manufacturers to these scripts. And you see that with respect to beauty or pleasantness and legibility, they have different properties. For example, this script is not very legible because it has very small dots. And dots are very important in distinguishing between different letters in Persian. So there are many letters whose only difference is the number of dots, and therefore, you know, if the dots appear so small, and therefore when you print, maybe the print mechanism does not make good contact, and therefore one of these two dots disappears, and then that letter T becomes Nun, and causes problems in recognizing. Here I've shown on the same slide the Latin or English letters versus some Persian letters in poems. Okay, to emphasize two differences. One is English letters, especially the uppercase ones, are very uniform in size. And they're very geometric in shape. So for example, H is basically straight lines, I similarly. There are some curves, but not very many of them. G is curved, Q is curved, and so on. Persian letters are mostly curved. So, and then they have vastly different sizes if you write them properly. So for example, we have, this is the fixed width version. So the Nun here is of the same width as this Te, which is weird, makes it weird. But in this version, variable width version, the Nun is much smaller in width than the Te. That's really what we consider nice Persian writing. Okay, so variable width. You have some variable width in English. So for example, lowercase I is much narrower than lowercase M, but the differences are less pronounced in English than in Persian. And then the height, similarly, the height of uppercase letters is exactly the same. In lowercase, it varies, but not by much. Whereas the height of Persian letters is very variable. Of course, this is already compromised. This guf, for example, normally is written much taller. Okay? And then when the letter goes under the line, this mim is normally written much taller. Okay? But we have compromised in this particular script to reduce that variability, because if we don't do that, then spacing of lines must be much wider. You know, if this mim goes further down and then this kaf goes further up, okay, lines have to be separated by more in order to separate these from each other. Okay? So this script is very legible. It's especially designed for legibility. You see that the dots are exaggerated. They're a little bit larger than we are used to. And shapes of letters, so for example, the letter mim, you see the hole inside it has been exaggerated a little bit to make sure that when you print it, it doesn't get filled and therefore reduce the quality of the script. So these are the two main differences. Variability in width is greater in Persian script. Variability in height is also greater. And this makes the job more difficult. And therefore, we have to adapt the script a little bit, make adjustments in order to get reasonable quality of script without wasting a lot of space. In fact, Persian, one interesting property, is more compact horizontally than English if you write the same thing. So these are some newspaper headlines with modern Persian fonts. That example comes later. So if you write the same sentence, like for example, I met Mr. So-and-so in the talk, typically the English version of the sentence need more space horizontally than the Persian version. And one of the reasons is that in Persian, we omit short vowels. They don't need any space. If you do include them, they go on top or bottom of other letters. However, vertically, English is more compact than Persian. Okay, so when we went to typewriters, if each Persian letter has four variants, and there are 32 Persian letters, some have two variants, but roughly speaking, we need 120 different letters, different shapes. And that's too many for a typewriter keyboard. Okay? So we had to make another compromise, and that compromise was to reduce the number of variants. Okay, so here I've shown the old typewriters with the Persian keyboard. And the way it worked, when you pressed, sorry for explaining this, a lot of you may not have seen this except in museums. You had to press a key, a hammer mechanism would go up and hit against the ribbon here in front of the paper, and that hammer would make the shape of whatever letter happened to be on that hammer. And then the next letter, the paper moved a little bit, and then the next letter appeared next to it, and so on. This is the IBM, one of the first IBM electric typewriters that used a golf ball, what we call golf ball mechanism for printing. The PowerPoint version of this has an animation that actually shows this golf ball moving. So the way this moves is that when you press a key, the golf ball rotates and then also tilts so that one letter in the corresponding row is imprinted on the paper. The quality of type improved significantly when this came. And also these typewriters had memory. So when you typed, the entire line that you typed was in the memory. So when you backspaced, it knew what was the last letter you typed, and it had a white ribbon in addition to the black ribbon. It actually had three, black, red for highlighting, and white for erasing. So whenever you backspaced, it would imprint the same letter that it had in memory, so erased what you had. And this very nice mechanism, before that, you know, we had to use these whiteout liquid fluids to erase things, and it became messy, and we had to wait until it dried before putting the new letter in. This allowed me to type one of my books myself, and therefore, you know, make sure that things appeared correctly. I have full control over what appeared on each page, the diagrams, and so on. And that book is shown here. It was called Oshnayi va Computer, or Introduction to Computers. It was a very popular book because it taught computers to people who did not have any technical background. So this is an example of a couple of pages from the book. And here is the enlarged font from one of the pages that shows you the quality of the script. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
Even though it had constant width letters, so we still had the problem of beginning being a bit too large. And then, for example, ye being too small compared to this. But still, it was pretty good, and I managed to type this, and then we use what is called offset printing. Basically, when I typeset, that sheet goes to the printer, they take an image of it, and then print based on that image. Okay, so, I forgot to mention that compromise that we made. Using the direction. And that compromise was reduce the number of forms of various letters. So some letters we could not do anything, like Ain has four shapes, beginning, middle, end, and solo. But Mim, if you look here, these two are not that far apart. These two are very different, so we can't really do anything about it. But these two, if you just remove this tail, become about the same. And therefore, we had two shapes for most letters.
And this made it possible to fit the entire alphabet on a standard typewriter keyboard. And if you see here, B has four shapes, beginning, middle, end, and solo. These two were combined into this one shape, and these two were combined into this one shape. So you could connect it to the previous letter, or you could leave it alone. So it doesn't look completely good, but it's acceptable for a typewriter. And one of the things that helps in typewriters, especially the mechanical kind, is that when the hammer hits or the golf ball hits the paper, hits the ribbon, and then that hits the paper, there's a little bit of smudge created. So the shape of the letter will not be exactly clean like this one. So that smudge helped hide some of the imperfections. It was helpful in that sense. Oh, nowadays when we use Persian, those of you who use Persian on your, say, cell phones, you have a keyboard that has only one form for each letter. Okay, it doesn't distinguish between the various forms. And there's software that takes care of, you know, showing the appropriate form depending on what you type next. So here I've shown you an example. If you want to type the word kamtar, meaning less in Persian, you start with typing K, and then at that point, the software doesn't know whether there's something after it, so it shows it to you like this. Of course, if this is being printed, you have a problem. You can't print that. You have to delay the printing until the next letter is known. So those initial typewriters that use this smart technology actually delayed printing by one letter. Once you know that the next letter is meme, then you already know the shape of this kit. Okay, so with one letter delay, you could. And then, so meme, again, is the end form, because we don't know whether something comes after. Then te changes that meme to that form. And now, this is very good. It simplifies life immensely, because you don't have to worry about what shape of the form, except, in fact, this happened to me when I wanted to write about this in a paper. I want to say that the letter Ain in Persian printing has four forms, the beginning form, the middle form, the end form, and the solo form. Except that when I put this Ain in quotations, the software converts it to the solo Ain. Mm-hmm. It doesn't allow me to show this, so I had to use some tricks. But these are rare enough to, and the trick I used in this case, I followed this Ain with an Aleph, and then changed that Aleph to white font. Therefore, it is there, but you don't see it. So that forced basically the software to use this initial form. Okay, so this is extremely helpful that we can just type. It's even easier than English typing now, because we don't even have uppercase and lowercase. We just have one form for each letter.
See how your life is easier than
they just learned the Persian alphabet this quarter, so so it's
very timely.
Yeah, very timely. Yeah. So you see how it works.
Okay. Then we also need it for the typewriter. My focus in this talk is on output, you know, how you create the Persian script. But you also need input to be able to enter. And again, on your cell phones, you have Persian keyboard or Arabic keyboard. There are various versions of it. So in those days, we didn't have cell phones. We wanted to equip the typewriters or our computer terminals with keyboard. And this is the standard, what we call QWERTY keyboard. QWERTY, these letters basically say the layout. And then we came up with this for Persian. But this occurred about a year and a half before the revolution, when, you know, nothing was working in the country. Therefore, this standard, the standard committee that was working on this, was disbanded. And the recommendations of that committee basically never were adopted. So
But after the revolution, some people took over and redid this. And this one we called the Zud Gozar keyboard because of the letters that you see here. Zud Gozar. So it's a name that is easy to remember, like QWERTY. Okay, so.
Are there different type of keyboard, or we just have that Zud Gozar for Farsi?
There are many different kinds. We were trying to standardize this because it was a pain when we went from one typewriter to another typewriter to the computer terminal. The layouts were different. So we were trying to standardize so that once you learn, once you become proficient in using the keyboard, it didn't matter whether you're using the IBM typewriter, NCR typewriter, IBM terminal, and so on. It would make life easier for everybody. Okay, and this is basically the code proposed for letters and symbols. It's an extension of ASCII, except it's called ISO, International Standard Organization Code, where half of the code is basically Latin letters and symbols. The other half is free for each country to use for their own script, and we used it for Persian. So some symbols like equal are the same in Persian as this here, but we duplicate it because the way these symbols are mixed with the text are different in Persian. Some symbols are different, like the question mark is backwards in the other direction. Semicolon, comma, the shapes are different. So we have a second set of special symbols on the Persian side so that we didn't have to mix Persian and English in the same text. If we were just typing Persian, there was no need to mix them. And as some of you know, if you have tried to use Persian and English in the same text message, there are a lot of problems, formatting problems. Okay, we try to avoid that.
Still no resolution
for that? No, there isn't. Every keyboard and every software that I've tried has had that problem. They're less severe in some cases, but the ordering, you know, when you put, for example, you want to say the English word for school is school, so واجه انگلیسی برای مدرسه school است. The word school in English that comes in the middle of the Persian sentence, depending on where it occurs, near the end of the line, near the beginning of the line, and so on, whether it's followed by a punctuation mark and so on, whether we put school in quotations, for example, it messes things up. And yeah, the general thing I recommend is that we have to complain about this because people sitting in, although you know many of these technology companies do have Iranians working for them, lot of Iranians, or people of Iranian origins, you know, second, third generation immigrants, that could have an input into this process.
But
for some reason,
to whom should we complain?
Wherever there is. For example, if any company provides a mechanism for feedback.
Why don't you take us our complaints?
Forward them.
In fact,
exactly.
I think some of my complaints have had an effect.
Yeah,
I don't want to take credit for it because I complained to Facebook and a few weeks ago a new Persian font appeared.
Yes, yes.
Not on all Facebook platform, but just on the cell phone. My desktop and laptop are still the old one.
Yeah.
On iPhone, Persian dare ya na?
Yeah.
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 There's a keyboard. There's an app. The one I use is called Farsi Board.
Farsi.
In one word, Farsi Board.
As Apple battery download.
Go to the App Store. Type Farsi board in one word, you know, without any space. And you can download that, and it's free of charge.
I did it last week.
And
it allows you to. Okay, now the first printers, let me see how I'm doing it. Okay, should I try to end in about 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me go through a sequence of diagrams that show early printers that we used for printing. This one I spend more time on. The other ones are pretty similar, so I can go through them more quickly. This was known as drum printer. And a drum printer had this drum mechanism, cylinder, with letters appearing around the perimeter and in different columns. So here you see A, B, C, D, E, and so on around, so that the entire alphabet and symbols, other symbols, appear there. So if you want to print, let's say, the letter B in this position of a line, you waited until this drum rotated and the letter B aligned with the ribbon and the print mechanism, the hammer. And the hammer would be struck against the paper and will push the ribbon against the letter shape, and that letter would appear on the paper. So in those days, we had what were called line printers. An entire line was printed at once. So in order to print a line, we had to have as many hammers here as there were characters in the line. The standard in those days was 132 characters per line. So there were 132 hammers here, each with its own control mechanism, and software would decide when to strike each hammer so that the appropriate letter would appear there. So one revolution of this drum was enough to print an entire line, because every letter would eventually pass by that position. And this drum was rotating at very high speed, several hundred rotations per minute. And therefore, these were pretty fast printers for their days. So you could print an entire page in maybe 2 seconds, 3 seconds. Okay? So what's wrong with this printer for Persian? Of course, you just replace these Latin letters with Persian. The problem is that these letters are separated, and the hammers are also separated from each other. And so when you printed something in Persian, it would appear like this. The connection was not good. That smudge problem that I said helped a little bit, because this would be smudged a little bit and this would be smudged. And so the separation was not as bad as I've shown on this diagram. But still, it was noticeable. And for a native Persian speaker, it would be bothersome to see Persian written in that way. One solution that IBM experimented with and then abandoned was to rotate the process. In other words, instead of printing lines in this direction, let's print lines in this direction. In that way, if this letter has to be connected to the next one, it's up to us where to strike the hammer. So we could strike the next hammer immediately after the previous one. And so letters could actually be connected to each other. But this was, from a practical standpoint, not an acceptable solution, because if you had only a few lines on this page, and this happened, for example, when they printed personnel records, there would be the record for one person, and then they had to move to the next page, print the record for the other person. So in those applications, some of these pages had only a few lines of text. And in this version, you would print those two, three lines, whatever, and then fast forward the paper, move the paper quickly to the next page. But if you print the lines in this direction, you actually have to wait for the paper to move that amount of, so it would take more time to print. Okay, so this was then. A sequence of newer technology came about. So these are examples of line scripts that we had in those days. I've also shown the smudge problem. As I said, this is a problem because the letters do not look as nice. There's also an ally because of that connectivity that we require. So the smudge helped letters appear connected to each other. Okay, these are examples of scripts from the 1970s, some of the earliest Persian printers. And you see that the quality, those of you who read Persian, the quality of the output is not that great. Okay, so I'll show you some later ones in a minute. This is what is known as a chain printer. It was like a bicycle chain. It would go around, the same concept. Letters would appear on these links of the chain, and then the chain would move around, and you would strike the hammer at the appropriate time to get the letter that you wanted. This is called the daisy chain printer. The letters appear on arms, like the petals of a flower, at the ends of those arms. And then this would rotate quickly, and then again you strike the hammer when the letter was aligned with the position that you are trying to print. We also had what were known as line segment displays, and early calculators used this. In some cases, you know, display boards and airport schedule displays use this. So this is for numerics that you see. It provides a reasonable quality image of the digits with seven segments. These are the seven segment extended with two more to make letters possible. So for example, the letter B. If you didn't have these two, then there was no way to show B in a way that is distinct from 8, okay? So the quality is not good. This is a little bit better, more segments. And in fact, this type is from this display. So for example, you see Q, the letter Q, is these segments plus this one, okay? The uppercase letters are reasonable in this example. The lowercase are awful. You know, you probably should not use this scheme for showing lowercase letters, because look at J, N, and let's see, R versus small q. It's really ugly. So we decided, in those days we thought that these displays have a future. It turned out that they were very quickly replaced by new technology. So we did
Persian
version. Yeah.
Question. Have you had any contribution of implementing these applications, you personally?
Yeah, we did with, we had a computer systems lab at Sharif University. Me and several colleagues and a number of graduate students did some of these. So this is our line segment display contribution. If we had to display Persian digits and letters, and this is the proposed seven segment display that can display 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 up to 0. It's not great, but it's doable if you had to do it. This is the display for letters. I forgot, I think it's, 18 segments, I said. 18 segments. And then, for example, if you want to write Khe, these are the segments that would.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the dot.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is an engineering problem. Of course, if you had, you know, 50 segments, you could do a much better job.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very costly to implement. So we settled on 18 segments as something that can do a reasonable. And again, we abandoned this. We made prototypes, but it never went to the production stage because these displays were replaced by dot matrix display. And this is the modern technology that we use these days. The concept of dot matrix displays is the same concept of Kufi script that Persian artists used to write stuff using tiles on mosques and other historical buildings. So the idea is that you have square tiles of black and white, and then you set them
next to each other in a pattern that would show a writing. In this case, the writing, I don't even know what it is. If I spend some time, maybe I can discover what it means. And this is another example. Okay, so the idea is that you have a matrix of dots, and you select a subset of that matrix to represent any given letter or symbol. And for example, this is E in a 7x5 matrix. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Perhaps one of them is the space underneath. And then 1, 2, this may not be 5. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, there are 5 columns. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But this is, you know, a short letter. The T has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 rows. Okay, so again, for Latin script, a 7x5 matrix does a reasonable job. As you see, the text is readable. If you take the smudge factor into account and these dots are more or less connected to each other, it looks even better. Okay, and early dot matrix printers printed these dots one column at a time. So if you wanted to print S, you would print these dots corresponding to the first column of S, then the next set of dots corresponding to the second column until the letter S appears. Okay, let me go a little bit more quickly with the rest of the discussion. And now, one advantage of these dot matrix printers is that not only you can write letters and digits, you can draw shapes. It's very flexible. So here you see a map of the world. So in modern displays, for example, you have a display that is a huge dot matrix, a number of rows and a number of columns, let's say 1200 by 1600, whatever the resolution is. And then you can draw maps on it. And of course, if you have color capability, you can, you know, distinguish the countries by using different color dots there. You can draw a circle approximately using those dots. So anything you can do, graphics as well as text display. Okay, so when these dot matrix displays and printers came, our task was to design the font that would use those displays. And this is an example of a font. It's not a very good font because the matrix is too small. It is 9 rows by 7 columns. You need a larger matrix to generate good quality Persian script. And again, the reason for that is that there are a lot of height variations. So you choose the middle line here as the connecting line, or in this case, it's not the middle line, it's a little bit lower. And then you have to have enough dots to represent the tall letters like K, G, and so on. And you have to have enough dots below to represent the letters that go far below the line. Okay, so once somebody designed this font, we have to test to see whether we didn't want to go and actually program this on the computer because it was time-consuming. So we simulated that by putting these matrices on a piece of paper next to each other to see what different words would look like with that particular font design. In this case, you see that the quality of script is not really good. You have to go to a larger matrix. When you go to a larger matrix, you can improve the quality substantially. So this is a small matrix for R. This is a large matrix for R. That you see, you can do a much better job of representing the letter R. Similarly, for Persian, this is the beginning of the word Tehran, the Te. So these ones are actually dots. They're written as ones, twos, and threes, because this is the output of a text recognition program that took newspaper headlines and told us, you know, what the headline said. So it basically decided that this is actually three letters, found the boundaries of those letters, and then took this information here to decide what letter that represented.
And in fact, those properties of the Persian script that makes printing difficult also make recognition difficult. So again, the difference between small b and small y is very small, and you can easily confuse it if the b is a little bit noisy, and the y, you know, one of the dots is not large enough or missing. So these are examples of more modern scripts from the 1980s that show a significant improvement over the ones from the 1970s. This is an example of Facebook font. Yeah.
This is before your complaint, right?
No, this is actually, this is a very recent. This is from my desktop. You see the quality of the text is not as good. This is from a website. This is pretty good Persian script. It's a news site. I forgot what news site it is. It's a news story about Google banning, you know, software developed in Iran as a result of the sanctions from its store.
Excuse me, Facebook
yeah.
in Iran is entirely in Farsi, for instance?
Facebook, you can do Farsi typing if you have the keyboard.
It
accepts.
Yeah.
It accepts, so it's up to you.
If Iranians, I know they know English, all Iranians know, but they cannot view it in Farsi? No.
They can.
They can.
If you, users can have an English name, or a Farsi name,
uh-huh.
It allows, Facebook allows. So
right.
If your name is Behruz, you can type it in English or write it in Persian. And then whatever post or comment, you can do in any language you want.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's not just English and
Persian.
Right.
I see if Farsi post on Facebook.
Yeah.
I haven't typed anything.
Of course, Facebook is now illegal in Iran. Many people use it through, illegal software that overcomes the ban, but officially, you know, no Iranian has a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
It's a no-no.
Okay.
People can go to prison. You know, one of the charges can be having a Facebook page.
Okay.
Oh, although it's not enforced, but you know, if they want to really bother somebody, that's one of the charges they add to a list of other charges. Okay. So let me.
That's why now people use Instagram or Twitter. Telegram
is still legal, in part because they have not yet broken a security system to be able to infiltrate it. And the secondary reason is that there isn't much discussion going on in Telegram. You just send a video, a joke, or something. So it cannot be politicized in the same way that Facebook can. Yeah.
What about WhatsApp?
WhatsApp, I don't remember. WhatsApp, I just read a story. It's one of the most banned applications. The number of countries that have banned WhatsApp is the largest number. The number of countries that have imprisoned people is largest for Facebook. Charge of, you know, being active on Facebook, I think it's, I forgot how many countries, but WhatsApp is banned outright in many countries. Largest number compared to the other. Okay, so these are examples, this is one of my last slides, examples of Persian script on Microsoft Word. If you go to the font menu on Microsoft Word, it gives you these options that you can use. It turns out that Arial, Cambria, Helvetica, and Times New Roman all are the same. They're just given different names. They're all the same.
Presentation.
Maybe eventually, you know, they will make changes, but at present, these four are the same thing. These are different. Calibri font, Courier is the fixed width font. Dubai Light, so this is basically the
the bold-faced version of this. And then Tahoma, which has that problem of very small dots, and traditional Arabic.
Do we have Dubai in English? I don't remember. On Microsoft Word?
Microsoft Word is one of the, on the menu, it's
no,
one of the fonts.
Dubai.
Yeah,
I
Dubai.
Haven't seen it, yes.
All of these are, I took from Microsoft Word. Maybe my Word is a newer version, I don't know.
Okay.
It could be, you know, included in newer versions. Okay, some of these are pretty nice. For example, Dubai is very nice in terms of readability. Okay, probably these are best in terms of aesthetic quality. Okay, and then so I've enlarged these four that are different from each other over there to see the word hat script, how it looks.
So these are the only ones available?
These are the only ones I noticed on my version of Microsoft Word. But, you know, fonts are available either free of charge online or for purchase. And there is the capability in most applications to add new fonts.
Mm-hmm.
It's just basically a set of tables that you import. But then you have to have some expertise in doing that. Go find the fonts that you like. Create one too. Yeah. In fact, there is an application that allows you to create your own font. My daughter once did it and called it Sepide font. She basically designed the letters and that's possible.
Is there more like for Nasalif?
Yeah, Nasalif, I'll show you a diagram in a minute. Those are not fonts because for writing Nasalif, you don't put letters next to each other. It's just basically a design. You say, this is the text I want, and there's an app that gives you that text, and that's that. Okay, so let me just conclude now by showing you my conclusions and some directions for future work. So with very high definition displays and printers, so high definition display is 1920 by 1080 dots. That's a lot of dots, so you can have very good representation of letters. And even the cheapest printers nowadays have 600 dots per inch. So you can have if the quality of your font design is good, then they're capable of displaying that on paper or on screen. These dot matrix printers basically freed us from all the previous considerations that, you know, made us work for years to overcome various problems. Now, font design and script design becomes a software problem. You know, every printer can print those dots. You just have to decide where to print the dots. Okay, so it's a software design problem. Future, we have learned from large data sets, and we have. So for example, if Facebook becomes suddenly interested in improving the Farsi script, the Persian script, they have tons of data. There are already many posts in Persian, and they can basically recruit people and say, okay, help us decide which of these are good. It's called crowdsourcing. These are two scripts. Which one do you think is nicer? Which one is more legible? And then collect tons of data to decide what to do with the font. Formatting, especially in bilingual output, is where we need the most work. That's still one of the outstanding problems. And basically, my advice is that you have to expect more to get more. If you are satisfied with what you're getting, it's not going to improve, so you have to complain. And
that's true about everything.
Yes.
Computers.
Yeah. So remember to complain about the president you got, so there's an improvement. Okay, so let me show you that Nastali just in passing. These are examples. There is this site that you can go to, www.nastalih.online, that's one word, IR, that's an Iranian site. You enter your text,
and then it gives you the Nastaliq version of it. Of course, in this example, which is the title of my talk, the program had the problem here, connecting noon to Gaf and connecting She to Kaf here.
Yeah.
But generally, in most examples, it does a good job. And if you're, you know, printing a brochure, invitation or something, or you want the title to appear in this font, it's easy. It creates JPEG image. So you input, there's a box. You enter your text, and then select Nastaliq, Shikasted, or variations, which script you want to use, and then it generates this, and then you can copy this as an image and take it to whatever application you're using to create your brochure. Okay, sorry for taking more time than I was allowed, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you.